Here's a few quick notes about the show. Southern Girl Crime Stories is a podcast focused mostly on lesser-known true crime cases that range from murders, missing persons, cold cases, soft cases, and more. Please be sure to check out my YouTube channel for these stories, along with photos of victims, suspects, locations of murders, and more. Vladek Hassel was born in Russia on December 20, 1998. In 2004, an American family adopted 5-year-old Vladek and his 11-year-old sister Irina from an orphanage in Yegordius, Russia. He was then given the name Brian, but later in life, he reverted to his original name Vladek, which he sometimes shortened to Vlad. Vlad loved to make people feel important and heard. He was known for tipping big at restaurants and was described as a very caring person who enjoyed giving back to the homeless community. After high school, he joined the U.S. Marine Corps, but became unhappy after being given a desk job. He then came up with an idea to get discharged by using the early childhood trauma he experienced in Russia, which worked. After that, he moved to East Orlando, Florida, to live with his father, Steve Hassel. In January of 2020, after living with his father for a short time, he moved in with his sister, Carrie, in Michigan. He then got a job working as a housekeeper at a local hospital. When the pandemic hit, his sister, Carrie, took a leave of absence from work. 3 months later, the three of them moved to Nashua, New Hampshire. Vlad got another job there, but was fired for an unknown reason and ended up back in Florida, living with his father and stepmom. However, once back in Florida, he failed to get another job, which caused issues between him and his dad and stepmom. Eventually, his father divorced, and he and Vlad lived for a couple of months in hotels before finally moving into an apartment at a complex called The Place at Alepha. During this time, Vlad had become depressed and expressed interest in living off the grid in the woods. He also became very religious and would comment to his dad, "What is the point if we can just be in heaven?" His religious views became a top priority in his life and changed the way he thought about material things, calling them a distraction from heaven. He even went as far as to break and discard his phone and give away his tablet. On November 5th, his dad left for a 10-day family road trip to Tennessee. While Vlad was invited, he decided instead to stay home. His father gave him $100 and a credit card for emergencies. He even offered to buy him some groceries, but Vlad declined, saying there was enough stuff in the house to live off of. After his dad left, Vlad decided to walk to a place he frequented called Foxtail Coffee on University Boulevard. He didn't own a car, so walking was his only option for getting around. After getting a coffee, he sat down and began listening to music with his headphones on. A customer then accused him of having a pocket knife out on the table, and so the coffee shop kicked him out. 2 a.m. that morning, he called his sister Irina from his flip phone that his family encouraged him to have for emergencies, and they spoke for about 6 minutes, which was not unusual. About 5 hours later, at 7:11 a.m., Vlad returned to the Foxtail coffee shop, but once there, an employee called the police because of the complaint the night before. After the police arrived, spoke to Vlad, and issued him a trespass warning, he calmly left. He then started walking west toward a nearby Wawa gas station. 6 days later, on November 12th, a maintenance worker at the apartment complex claimed to have spoken with Vlad near the basketball court. Another resident at the apartment complex said they spoke with Vlad on the 15th and claimed he told them he was going off the grid. That same day, his father returned home, but Vlad was nowhere to be found. He also discovered his flip phone in his bedroom, dead with the charger cord nearby. 2 days later, his sister reported him missing. Authorities began searching for him using helicopters, canines, drones, and thermal imaging, but all that was found was a red Nike slide that his family believed belonged to him. It was located near a swamp by the apartment complex. 3 months later, in mid-February, there was a possible sighting of Vlad near Foxtail Coffee. The customer reported previously seeing a man having a possible manic episode near the coffee shop's dumpster. The man was reportedly being very animated and talking to himself. The barefooted man was later seen by the same witness walking away from the coffee shop towards Wawa. However, employees at the shop who knew Vlad said the man wasn't him. Come to find out, Vlad had given his credit card to a couple of homeless people to use for basic necessities. However, they began abusing the privilege. One of those people was a 27-year-old homeless woman who had been arrested about 30 times and had been tied to two homicides in the area. Could he have asked for the credit card back and was murdered over it? Sadly, it's now been over 2 years, and as of 2023, Vlad remains missing, and this case is unsolved. Calandra Rachel Stallworth was born on May 18, 1988. In 2017, 28-year-old Calandra lived in Crestview, Florida, with her two daughters and had been dating a man named Antoine Montrek Smith for the past 4 years. Unfortunately, Antoine had a long criminal record and was described as controlling and allegedly abusive toward Calandra. On March 27th, Calandra was headed to her housekeeping job at the Hilton Sandestin Beach Resort and dropped her kids off next door at her grandmother's home. That evening, she called to say she was on her way home, but sadly never arrived. When she failed to show up, her family quickly reported her missing. In a strange twist, Calandra showed up at the police station 2 days later on March 29th and asked them to cancel her missing persons report. She said that she and Antoine had been in Alabama and she hadn't told her family because she didn't have cell phone service. After leaving the police station, she once again failed to contact her family and was never seen again. On April 2nd, 4 days after she originally went missing, police in Destin, Florida, pulled over Calandra's car as it was leaving a Motel 6. The driver of the car was Calandra's boyfriend, Antoine, and his passenger was 18-year-old Talia Durham, who, just like Calandra, had been reported missing a few days prior. However, Calandra was nowhere to be found, but inside the car, they found her purse and cell phone. At that point, her missing persons report was refiled. Antoine was then arrested for possession of cocaine and marijuana, driving without a license, and violating his probation. When questioned about Calandra's whereabouts, he said that he had dropped her off at another man's home but wouldn't elaborate further. Investigators believe that Calandra was picked up from work on the 27th by Antoine, and they began driving around the Florida panhandle for unknown reasons. They were able to track their movements until Calandra's cell phone died. Her family now questions whether or not the woman who walked into the police station on March 29th was really Calandra. They even asked for the security footage, but it had already been erased. In October 2020, over 3 years after Calandra went missing, Antoine was charged with capital murder in the shooting deaths of two men, Ryan Frazier and Joshua Carroll, both from the Seattle, Washington area. They were linemen for a contracting company and had been installing cable lines in Alberta, Alabama, when Antoine murdered them. The men were drug associates of Antoine's, and it's alleged they were murdered due to a drug deal gone wrong. As of 2023, Calandra has never been found, and this case remains unsolved. Julie Maiulo was born on August 31, 1983, and was nicknamed Jujubee after her favorite candy. At 3 years old, Julie was the second youngest of five siblings and was often seen tagging along with her brothers and sisters. In 1987, she and her family lived on Southwest 19th Street in Pompano Beach, Florida, when tragedy struck. On June 8th, at about 9:30 a.m., Julie told her mom, Brenda, that she was going to a friend's home nearby. 10 minutes later, a neighbor saw her walking a beaten-down path to a nearby Circle K convenience store. Around 10 a.m., Brenda saw the friend that Julie was going to visit, but she was alone and Julie was nowhere to be found. By 11:50 a.m., when there was still no sign of Julie, she called the police and a massive search was underway. Police began searching cars and going door-to-door throughout the neighborhood. Her family also hung up thousands of missing posters. Early on in the investigation, Brenda was given a polygraph exam. The results are unknown, but she was never named a suspect. Julie's father, Tony, and her 15-year-old sister, Camille, were also questioned, but not given lie detector tests. Investigators asked Tony if he had any enemies that might have taken Julie as retaliation, but he said no. Strangely, Sandy Berkowitz, who was a friend and neighbor of the Maiulo family, told investigators she received two mysterious collect phone calls the day before Julie went missing, one at 2 a.m. and the other at 9:05 a.m. The mystery caller claimed to be Julie's sister Camille, but Sandy said it didn't sound like her. The girl on the phone was sobbing and told Sandy that her father was beating her. She also said she was using the payphone at the Circle K convenience store around the corner from the family's home. However, when Sandy called the girl's mother, Brenda, she said that Camille was asleep at home. When the girl called back later that morning, she screamed at Sandy, "Why didn't you come pick me up? Tony was beating me." Sandy believed the calls were related to Julie's disappearance. I also want to add that Sandy consulted with a medium, and based on information from that person, she led investigators to a field about 3/4 of a mile from their neighborhood. However, it was a dead end. 10 months later, on April 21, 1988, two men had gone out for some shooting practice in a remote part of western Broward County near State Road 84 and US 27 when they discovered Julie's skeletal remains. One of those men was 25-year-old Mike Fletcher, who had been reaching down to pick up rocks to jam under his truck tire. One of those rocks he picked up was strange to him, and when he turned it around, he shockingly noticed teeth. It was at that point he realized he was holding a human skull. The rest of the skeletal remains were in a heap on top of a rotting white towel. Sadly, Julie had clearly been murdered, wrapped in a towel and discarded. Even though there were only skeletal remains, the medical examiner was still able to determine that she had either been strangled or smothered to death. In 2008, FBI leaders gathered in Knoxville, Tennessee, and picked 5 child abduction cases from around the country to reinvestigate. One of those cases was Julie's, but even after a public appeal and offering a $25,000 reward, it didn't help progress the case. It's now been over 30 years, and as of 2023, her murderer has never been found, and this case remains unsolved. Trenton John Duckett was born on August 10, 2004, to parents Melinda and Josh. Melinda was born in South Korea, but was adopted in 1985 by an American couple who lived in Lockport, New York. When she was 17, she moved out of her adoptive parents' home and moved in with her grandparents. In high school, she and Josh began dating and eventually married in 2005. In April of that same year, Josh reported Melinda for harming Trenton, and she was sectioned under Florida's Baker Act, which provides emergency mental health services and temporary detention for people who are impaired because of their mental illness. In December, she was diagnosed with obsessive-compulsive personality disorder, but the report said she would still be a capable parent. At this point, Melinda and Josh were accusing each other of abusing Trenton, so he spent quite a bit of time at his grandparents' home or in foster care. In July of 2006, Melinda filed for divorce, and by August, they were in a bitter divorce and custody battle. She had even taken out a restraining order against Josh. It would later be said that she loved to play mind games throughout the custody battle. Around this time, she claimed that Josh sent her threatening emails. The judge, believing they were from Josh, gave Melinda temporary custody. However, it was later discovered that Melinda had sent the emails to herself. On August 27, 2006, Trenton was staying with Melinda at the Windermere Apartments in Leesburg, Florida. At 7 p.m. that night, she said she put Trenton to bed, but when she returned 2 hours later to check on him, he was gone. When investigators arrived, they found the bedroom window screen slit, leading them to believe that Trenton had been kidnapped. For several days, investigators searched for Trenton, but to no avail. They eventually stated that Trenton's parents were the main focus of the investigation, and they had no reason to believe that Trenton was dead. Josh was given a lie detector test and passed and remains fully cooperative with investigators. So they decided to investigate a different angle. Josh's father, James Duckett, who went by Jimmy, was on death row in Florida. He was a former police officer who was convicted of the murder and sexual assault of a young girl in 1988. Josh was only a toddler at the time, but they have maintained a relationship with each other. Josh had even taken Trenton to visit Jimmy in prison. Melinda was also known to write Jimmy letters. However, the investigation into Jimmy led nowhere, and there was no evidence he was involved. About a week after Trenton went missing, investigators began to suspect that Trenton might have gone missing at a different time than Melinda said. She had picked him up from daycare a full day before he was reported missing, and no one had seen him since then. A witness came forward and said they saw Melinda hours before Trenton went missing, and she was alone. They asked her to take a polygraph and voice stress test, but she refused. Shockingly, investigators found photographs, sonogram images, clothes, and some of his toys in a garbage can inside Melinda's apartment. It's almost like she knew he was never coming back. She then told her attorney that on the day Trenton went missing, she took him and a shotgun to a shooting range at the Ocala National Forest. She said she got lost during the drive and drove around Central Florida for about 8 hours. However, this appeared to be another lie because a witness reported seeing her in Leesburg during this time. On September 8th, 13 days after Trenton disappeared, 21-year-old Melinda walked into her grandparents' home in Lady Lake, Florida, grabbed a shotgun, walked into the closet, and took her own life. She left two notes behind, one specifically for the public, where she expressed her love for Trenton but complained about being ridiculed and criticized after his disappearance. Unfortunately, neither note gave details on Trenton's location, and any information Melinda had, which was probably all of it, she took to the grave with her. Nancy Grace was then blamed for Melinda taking her own life. A day before the incident, Nancy interviewed Melinda and didn't go easy on her.
Where were you? Why aren't you telling us where you were that day? Why aren't you telling us and giving us a clear picture where you were before your son was kidnapped?
Because I'm not going to put those kind of details out.
Why?
Because I was told not to.
Miss Duckett, you're not telling us for a reason. What is the reason? You refuse to give even the simplest facts of where you were with your son before he went missing.
Nancy demanded to know why she was being so secretive. Melinda's adoptive parents then sued Nancy and won a $250,000 settlement. Josh has since stated that he feels Nancy Grace did nothing wrong. 2 weeks after Melinda's death, she was officially named the prime and only suspect in Trenton's disappearance. Investigators at the time didn't believe she harmed Trenton, but instead possibly sent him to live in South Korea. However, no proof of him leaving the country could be found. What do y'all think? Did she harm Trenton, or do you believe he is still alive? If he were still alive, he would be 19 years old, but as of 2023, he's never been found, and this case remains unsolved. Zachary Michael Cole Bernhardt was born on December 18, 1991. During the pregnancy with Zach, his mother, Leah, was living with her boyfriend, Jason Hibbard. However, after Zach's birth, a paternity test proved Jason wasn't the father, and so Leah moved out. In 1994, Leah, who was living in Chelsea, Michigan, with her boyfriend, Robert Jacques, gave birth to a daughter. In 1996, Robert sued Leah for custody, but the courts ruled that Leah could move back to Florida with her. In June of that same year, Robert traveled to Florida to visit his daughter. Leah met him on a stretch of I-75 near Tampa and surprised him when she asked him to watch both children because she was going out that night. When she failed to show back up, Robert took his daughter back to Michigan, where he filed for full custody and won. She eventually showed back up 2 days later, but her daughter was already gone. Over the next few years, Leah and Zach bounced around and were evicted from at least two apartment complexes. In 2000, 8-year-old Zach was a third grader and living with Leah at the Savannah Trace Apartments in Clearwater, Florida. He was described as an intelligent and cheerful child who excelled in school. He also loved to build things with items he found around the apartment. He was also part of a large, close-knit family that consisted of his grandmother, Carol Bernhardt, and several aunts, uncles, and cousins. By September 6, she was being evicted again for not paying her rent. On September 10th, around 11 p.m., Zach went to bed after watching a movie with his mother. Leah, on the other hand, was used to staying up all night for work and decided to leave the apartment. A neighbor friend of hers named Deanna Williams said she noticed that Leah's car was gone from the apartment at 3:45 a.m. Another neighbor said she went out for a smoke and noticed Leah pulling up to the complex around 4 a.m. At about 5:15 a.m., Deanna received a call from Leah asking if she had seen Zach. She said she had gone for a swim, and when she returned, he was not at the apartment. This was strange to Deanna because the pool closed at 10 p.m. I guess it's possible she could have still gotten in. After that, Leah called 911 to report him missing. People were searching everywhere for Zach, but were having no luck. Investigators eventually received a possible breakthrough in the case when a tip came in about a man named Kevin Jalbert, who had allegedly been bragging about kidnapping children. He also lived near Zach's apartment. Investigators began tracking his every move, and in September of 2001, he was caught soliciting an undercover officer to help him abduct, sexually assault, and murder a child. After being arrested, he was convicted and sentenced to 40 years in prison. To this day, Jalbert claims to have kidnapped over 1,000 children and says he murdered 5 of them. However, his sister says he's a chronic liar who likes to exaggerate for attention. Jalbert has denied being involved in Zach's disappearance, and his DNA was not found on evidence from the case. Regardless, he failed a polygraph in relation to the case. He also suspiciously visited a landfill 2 weeks after Zach vanished. All these years later, Jalbert remains a suspect. The year after Zach's disappearance, a man in a white pickup truck attempted to lure 3 boys with ice cream at the same apartment complex that Zach disappeared from. A 5-year-old was snatched and found alive in a dumpster 10 hours later in Bushnell, Florida, nearly 80 miles away. The case was never solved, and many wondered if the kidnapper was Jalbert before his arrest. Zach remains the longest-running Amber Alert in Florida, and as of 2023, he's never been found, and this case remains unsolved. Thanks for joining me today on Southern Girl Crime Stories. Please be sure to check out my YouTube channel for these stories, along with photos of victims, suspects, location of murders, and more. As always, your support is very much appreciated, and I look forward to seeing y'all next time.